Hi, greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Today, we're here with Amanda Trujillo with the Portland Freedom Fund. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, good to have you back. It's been a while. And initially, the project was kind of new and fresh a few years ago, and now has made some major traction, major attention, and has gotten a lot of support. And of course, part of that's because of all the crazy things that had happened in 2020. So looking forward to hearing about that. And can you still give a little bit more background about first yourself and how you got involved with these things, and also how the project got founded?
Oh, sure. So we began in early 2018. Gina Spencer and myself were looking to just start a local Black Mamas bailout. It's a national effort every year to bail out Black mothers from jail around Mother's Day. And Gina had realized there wasn't one locally and wanted to start one and asked for my help. So we did that. And ultimately, Portland Freedom Fund was born out of that. Gina's since moved away, so she's no longer with us. Terrence Hayes and I are running most of it right now. And we focus mainly on Black, Indigenous, and Brown folks, bailing them out of jail just to sort of leverage the playing field.
Can you give a little background on bail for, you know, any listeners who just might not be super familiar with that process? It seems like people probably see bail storefronts, you know, all over the country, and a lot of course, they're near facilities. And some people might not really know what goes on and how that process works. And there might be people who maybe they want to help and kind of understanding what's going on there.
Yeah. So bail operates a little bit differently in Oregon than it does in many states. We do not have bail bondsmen. That ended in, I believe, mid-1970s, after some harm that was caused by a bail bondsman trying to retrieve his money. So Oregon is only self-bail, no bail bondsman allowed. So that means the state is actually the bail bondsman. So to post your bail, it's generally 10% of the entire bail. So if your bail is $100,000, you would be required to post $10,000. Of that money, 15% automatically is going to be kept by the state, and that's for their processing fees or whatever fees they want to attach to that. If you owe any money for child support, any money to the county, any other fees, they'll generally take that money out of that as well. So if grandma's paying your bail, she may not get any of that money back. So that's part of the problem. And then once your case is completed, whatever is left over after that, the money goes back to you.
Can you talk a little bit just about kind of where these concepts even come from in the first place?
Sure.
And of course, I'm alluding to how arbitrary it is anyway, so.
It is, yeah. So I think the original intent of bail was this was going to be your collateral basically for returning to court. So you're gonna give your money. When you come back, they give you your money back. It's sort of an incentive to come back to court, is that you would get your money back. Since then, since the beginning, it has really turned into a tool for DAs and judges to keep people in jail that they deem too dangerous to be out, or are worried they will, you know, commit more crime. So it's really been a tool to keep people in jail. And when I say people, I mean poor people, because clearly if you are a wealthy person, you have a $100,000 bail, that's not going to be a problem for you in any way. You're just going to pay your bail and you're going to get out. For the same exact crime, if you are poor, you cannot get out. So it's not really about safety.
Right. So it's really just a part of the whole system that really preys on historically disenfranchised communities, and specifically people of low socioeconomic status. And of course, definitely affects people of color the most.
Absolutely. And it, you know, it adds to that generational. So if you are a wealthy person, you can generally post your own bail. if you're not a wealthy person, you're relying on family members and friends to pool together their money and try to get you out of there. And mind you, these are people who haven't been convicted of the crime they're being accused, right? This is just, you know, they haven't been found guilty. So we're holding them in jail in a cage when they haven't been found guilty of anything at this point.
So what I hear you saying is that people who are innocent until proven guilty are paying, are expected to pay hundreds of thousands, depending on the case, of bail money.
It's definitely pay to play.
Sure. It, I don't know if you followed it much, but I mean, can you tell us where some of this money kind of ends up? Does it get recycled through the DOC, with the state, with the county, depending on where you live in the United States? Or
it goes to a general fund in Oregon. So that 15% that the state takes goes to a general fund. So I can't even trace where that money is actually going. Mm-hmm.
So some kind of discretionary pot, if you will.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's one challenge is, you know, in a sense, we're sort of feeding the system that we want to destroy, which is, you know, a little bit of a challenge for us, little mental gymnastics to get through it. This is really not an abolitionist move. It's more of a harm reduction move for the folks that are affected by it.
Right. It's kind of alleviating the immediate
absolutely
struggles of just being already wrapped up in the system in general.
Right.
Yeah.
And honestly, the folks that we've bailed out, once they're out, that allows them the opportunity to be part of society, right? They're going to get their jobs. They're going to be able to keep their apartments. They're going to get that drug treatment that they needed. We've paid, fortunately, 2020 was very good with folks kind of rising to the occasion with defund the police, the protests, those sorts of things. We got a lot of support this year. So we were, or last year, I guess now, we were able to also help a few folks with inpatient treatment for drug and alcohol addictions, temporary housing when housing was a struggle for them. So those are things that we would prefer to spend our money on that than to pay the state to let a person the opportunity to go through that.
Mm-hmm.
And as an example, one person, you know, we paid $3,750 for the bail. So $3,750 for the bail and $1,500 for 3 months inpatient treatment. So imagine if we weren't paying for that bail, for the opportunity for him to get better, that money could have got two more people for inpatient treatment. And that's really what we would rather spend our money on, and get people the support that they need to live, you know, the freedom to thrive.
Yeah. And maybe I'm asking just to kind of help to, maybe it's kind of rhetorical, but like, why is it so much that a project like yours focusing on bailing out only Black, Brown, and Indigenous folks is important?
It's important, as I think, especially in Portland, where we're seeing so much of the Black community, the BIPOC community as well, finding themselves in situations where they're being priced out of their neighborhoods. The opportunity is much lower than white folks. They're also, you know, disproportionately targeted by policing, correct? So we know that there is a much higher percentage of Black folks in Multnomah County Jail than there are Black folks living in Multnomah County. So there's a clear difference there that we're trying to sort of atone for.
Yeah. So we're in 2021 now. So with all that happened in 2020, you know, even before that, since y'all last been on the show, what are some major things that have been kind of brewing for the project?
Well, I think, you know, I don't want to be too hopeful, but Multnomah County did put in a new DA. I know that Mike Schmidt is, you know, he was elected on, you know, his platform was that he was going to end cash bail. So we would definitely like to end cash bail. We're going to be watching very closely because we don't want cash bail to be replaced with a system that might even harm Black and poor folks more than cash bail. So many places that are looking to go away from cash bail are finding themselves using risk assessment tools, which are inherently biased in themselves. So some of those questions may be, you know, is this person more of a risk to our community because they have had more interactions with the police in their lifetime? Well, of course, they've had more interactions with the police in their lifetime. Their neighborhood is full of police, where, you know, our friends in Lake Oswego don't have that problem. So we'll have to be very careful what we replace it with. We don't want to cause even further harm to the BIPOC community.
Right. And can you talk a little bit more about what the alternatives would look like that would be less harmful, and also a little bit curious about a little more about the harmful ones, because definitely, and even on the show, you know, we've talked for years about different things going on in our county, right, Multnomah County in Portland, Oregon, where, you know, there are things like debit cards that suck all your money when you get arrested. So if you have $100 and you get this stupid debit card, you know, Visa card or whatever it was, and you know, and you know, but then just to get like the money back or whatever, just get the money out of the card, is cost $20 or something like that.
Exactly.
There's always this kind of game going on. So, but anyway, so it sounds so. Can you talk about what those look like?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of even before getting to bail, I think we need to step back and say, what are we criminalizing, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we've made some progress on, say, drug criminalization, correct? We've decriminalized supposed 110. We've decriminalized having drugs on you. Didn't decriminalize, you know, selling drugs, those sorts of things. But having drugs for personal use will no longer be a crime in Oregon. So I think that was a really good move. Unfortunately, it looks like, and I think people need to pay attention to whether or not that's going to be funded, because I believe a lot of people voted for that because it promised to offer treatment instead of jail for these folks. And if it's not funded, that's not going to happen. And that could actually be dangerous. I mean, we're looking at people who need treatment. And if we're not providing that treatment, and we've taken away some funding that would have been there in the jail system for their treatment, we might end up with more people overdosing, number one. So it's just something we need to put a lot of pressure on our legislators to follow through with what the people voted for and make sure that we've got treatment for them. So looking at what we criminalize, right? Mm-hmm. Do we need to criminalize blocking sidewalks, sleeping on the streets, right? Someone doesn't have a home, it's not a crime to sleep, you know, to sleep.
Right.
Yeah. So those sorts of things, I think that's one thing Mike Schmidt did with the protest, right? He went through and said, these are the things we will prosecute, these are the things we won't prosecute. So I think more of that is needed. And it very much varies by county in Oregon. I've noticed a higher number of charges for drugs in, say, Washington County than Multnomah County. I don't think Multnomah County has really been jailing a lot of people for drugs to begin with. Usually I'll see that as a secondary or third charge. They were arrested for something else and then had drugs on their person. So criminalization, what are we criminalizing? Does it make sense to even charge people with criminal acts, or do we get them the help they need, the support they need, so they can just thrive and be part of our community? So number one, just stop arresting people. That would help. And then we don't need to bail them out, right? But if we do, you know, someone steals a vehicle, is that something worthy of putting someone in a cage for, that we would have to spend our money to bail them out? Are they actually a danger to our community? There might be a nuisance. They're a nuisance, but they're not a danger to our community. And I don't know that that really should be something that we cage somebody for. So I think we need to look very carefully at what is worth taking away someone's, basically taking away their life from them, right? You're taking away their livelihood. They cannot work to make money. So if you have someone who hasn't been able to, and we've bailed people out who have been in there for well over a year, waiting for their trial. And these are not always, you know, these aren't always violent crimes. Sometimes they are kind of petty. And that entire time, they don't have any sort of income. They've lost their apartment. They've lost their connections to the community. So we're not doing them any favors. We're not doing our community any favors.
For folks just tuning in, you're listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. We're here with Amanda Trujillo with Portland Freedom Fund, talking about how arbitrary bail is nationally and what folks are doing locally in Multnomah County and in Portland, Oregon, around that issue. Do you have any idea what that bail money looks like every year? I mean, not just for your organization, but through the state, because you talked about kind of this lump fund that it goes to.
Yeah, I don't know the entire amount for the state. I can say for 2020, we bailed out approximately 60 people, and there are still many more that could be bailed out. And we spent, you know, we've got hundreds of thousands of dollars that is unfortunately right now tied up with the state, because what we're seeing is with COVID, it's a great excuse to not have trials. Mm-hmm. So everybody is sitting there waiting to have their day in court. I believe I heard Multnomah County in the last 4 months has had 2 trials. So these folks, if we hadn't bailed them out, I don't know how long they would be sitting there just waiting for their day in court. So that's another issue right now with COVID.
And can you talk about how you track these folks down? These, you know, you said about 60 people, or these people
yeah.
connected through the community in some sorts, or what's the process there?
Yeah, we do have some community referrals. We also have been on the radar of the public defenders, and I really do like working with the public defenders, because often they have access to resources to try to help folks once they are out. So if, you know, drug addiction is a problem, oftentimes they can help to coordinate beds for these clients to, you know, get the treatment they need. If housing is an issue, they can sometimes help connect us with housing. So public defenders have been probably our main source of referral for 2020.
Okay. And looks like you've also garnished quite a bit of support from National Bail Fund too. Can you talk a little bit about maybe the relationship or what they do, how it relates
to that? Yeah, so we joined the National Bail Fund Network early on when we were created. And I believe back then there were 20 some bail funds across the country through the network. There are also other funds outside of the network, but now I believe there's up to 50 some funds. And these are not only criminal bail funds, but they're also immigration bond funds. So we, you know, meet regularly, share ideas, discuss issues that we're having in our local areas. We're the only bail fund right now in Oregon for this, although the General Defense Committee was bailing out protesters. Very much appreciate the work they did last summer. They did a lot of work bailing out folks that we wouldn't have generally bailed out because, well, Portland's so white. So a lot of folks that were bailed out were white through the General Defense Committee. So we appreciate them, the solidarity in bailing folks out of jail for participating in the protest.
And General Defense Committee is a committee for the Industrial Workers of the World Union.
Right.
So it sounds like they also were able to support Portland Freedom Fund a little bit.
Yeah, they. We were in contact a few times throughout. They would occasionally get referrals from folks who were not protest related, but would fall under Black, Brown, or Indigenous. So they would refer them to us. And so that was very much appreciated. They did a lot of good work this summer.
And for folks who are interested in Portland Freedom Fund and or want to either get involved or lend some support, they can find Portland Freedom Fund on Facebook, and also the website's www.portlandfreedomfund.org. And yeah, what are some other things that people can do to kind of support this project, or I mean these kind of projects, and just support people from, I mean, you know, with the whole bail thing? I mean, you said there's kind of national stuff, or I'm sorry, national, but I mean of course city and state stuff that needs to happen. So I mean, what do you think that kind of looks like, and where is at some of it at, maybe on the ground, if you're familiar with
yeah, that? I think for those who can, financial support is definitely needed. Our funds are getting low just because so much money is tied up with these cases being delayed. We don't get money back to bail more folks out until those cases are done. So that's helpful. I would watch what's happening in the state. It looks like there are many work groups within the state that are looking at bail. There have been lawsuits in other states that bail is unconstitutional. And I think the state of Oregon is trying to get ahead of being sued. So I think there are efforts to try to get rid of bail. There are some constitutional things that they'll have to look at. And I think it's kind of a maybe a spendy endeavor to remove that from the Constitution. but that's definitely something to watch, and definitely put pressure on your local DA. Know who your district attorney is for your county. Put pressure on them. They're the ones that make the decision who to charge and who not to charge. And if it's not being done in a way that you feel is equitable or fair, you need to put pressure on your district attorney to take care of that.
Right. Yeah, because it just seems like this is just another issue wrapped up with the prison industrial complex that just kind of gets kind of swept under the carpet, and people just kind of take it for granted. And it's not until somebody really has to deal with the whole bail issue.
Yeah. Right,
that's when it opens up anybody's eyes who's not familiar with what's going on there with the process.
Yeah, in Multnomah County alone, they reduced the jail population because of COVID, and they currently have an outbreak, by the way. They reduced the population from 1,000 to just over 700, but all but 71 of those people are there pre-trial or because of some kind of hold from another county or from the feds. So most of the people in our jail in Multnomah County have not been convicted, which is really frightening.
I know that your main concern isn't what the cases are, but
no.
Is there any attention to what kind of cases are kind of, you know, common? And I know you mentioned a few and how minimal so many of the things are that people get caught up for. So
yeah,
I'm just kind of curious for more anecdotes on that, because it always baffles me even more when we see the nature of how stupid some of the things are. I mean, stupid in the sense of how much money you would get charged, you know, for the bail, considering somebody, you know, gets like a lollipop or something at a store or whatever, you know, the minimal thing is. But
yeah. Yeah. So I, with COVID, I would say Multnomah County, the charges have been more, you know, there's been assaults, some motor vehicle, you know, unauthorized use of a motor vehicle, unlawful use of a weapon, those sorts of things. So the charges have not been so much, there's been robbery, but not so much like just a shoplifting charge. We haven't seen a whole lot of that. We have taken on some of the, I guess people would consider higher risk charges. Terrence Hayes he's formerly incarcerated himself. He has some experience with those sorts of situations, and he is trying to mentor a few of these folks. We're having lots of conversations with them before we bail them out, see where they're at, see how the community's been affected, and make some decisions, bail them out, and kind of support them through the process and see if they can't end up in a better situation on the other side.
Mm-hmm. You know, we talked a little bit about kind of flip-flopping, but the national side of things with the bail fund, and that there are some other groups that are like local to their areas that do this work. And can you maybe just reference what some of those might be for especially people listening who are in different parts of the country than Oregon?
Yeah, folks can go to the National Bail Fund Network, which is www.communityjusticeexchange.org. And they've got a directory of bail funds that would be local in your area. I don't know if it currently, for a recent push we did, we also included some local mutual aid organizations. We're looking at, you know, freedom is not just not being behind bars, but freedom to thrive once you're in the community. So we have just seen that so many people have stepped up for mutual aid during COVID and wanted to highlight those efforts and make sure that folks are aware and can support those efforts as well.
And people should also check out PortlandFreedomFund.org and look y'all up on Facebook and all that stuff. Yeah. Are there any other kind of interesting anecdotes from 2020, you know, to move us forward into 2021, or just anything in general that, you know, you want to say about all the recent COVID restrictions and changes that's going on?
Yeah, I can say I really do think folks should take a look at who's in jail and in prisons across the country right now, and try to make some sense of why we would put folks' lives at risk with COVID. There are many people in there with lots of health issues that should not be in a situation. I think in Oregon, the top three outbreaks for COVID were in our prisons. So this is a time when we really need to reevaluate why we have people in cages. Is that the best thing for them and for our community? And how many lives are we gonna lose by our need to punish people.
Right. Well, thanks so much for all the great work that you do. And we hope to see more of it, you know, in 2021 and follow up, you know, this year as well. Any other or any shout outs you want to give to anybody or anything with the project, even to folks who are inside? You know, we did our holiday show, and, you know, give our shouts to people to say hi.
Yeah. Yeah. If we have folks inside, we are thinking about you, supporting you. And if you're in the community, just pay attention. There's going to be probably a lot of legislation in the next couple of years to watch for in regards to defunding the police, in regards to bail, in regards to, you know, mental health, drugs, those sorts of things. Pay attention, be aware.
Great. And that's PortlandFreedomFund.org. And of course, they're also on Facebook. Make sure you check out the project and follow them closely and help and do what you can. For folks, thanks for tuning in. Free them all.